Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about earthworms to begin the show today, and our guest is Brad Herrick, an ecologist and research program manager at the UW-Madison Arboretum. With Brad, we'll look at different types of earthworms, especially the invasive jumping worm, and answer your questions about earthworms. Have you had a problem with jumping worms? Join in. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Brad Herrick, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for having me.
Well, before we talk about jumping worms, which we kind of consider the bad worms, what about just the overall benefits of the good worms? What do they provide us?
Yeah, so, you know, earthworms are, like you mentioned in the introduction, are ubiquitous in Wisconsin. They're all over the state in a variety of habitats, from, you know, forests to golf courses to our backyard gardens. And, you know, as the garden community well knows, you know, earthworms have always been touted as having these great benefits for, you know, mixing soil and mixing nutrients through that soil profile that can really help our vegetable crops, our ornamental plants. And so that, you know, for a long time, and, you know, rightfully so, earthworms have had their place in those sort of urbanized environments and, you know, agriculture and garden type environments that help to produce our food and our backyard gardens. And, you know, so that's been a lot of where the understanding is in terms of earthworms in that community. And these jumping worms are quite different. They don't perform the same kind of benefits. Yeah.
And they've been in Madison, the Madison area, for a number of years. Where else around the state are they found?
Yeah, right. So the first record in Wisconsin was at the Arboretum in 2013. And since then, they have spread pretty much statewide. There are a few counties in the very northern part of the state that may not have them, but at this point, we've confirmed them in most counties, at least in pockets. So they've spread quickly.
Yeah. And how do they spread? Just jump around? I imagine it comes in, it gets spread through plantings that are moved around and so forth, too.
Yep, precisely. So, yeah, we're learning more and more about how they're spread. But in general, we find them often with gardening products, so mulch, compost, potted plants, like you mentioned, any sort of landscaping and gardening green materials that are, you know, used in your garden can have jumping worms. And yeah, that's definitely a high correlation. Where we see mulched areas and manicured areas, we often find or are finding jumping worms as well.
Yeah. You know what? Linda in Madison has a question relating to this. Linda, hi. Thank you for calling. Linda, are you there? She might be there. We'll hang on to her. We'll come back to her in just a minute and see if we can get her on. And they're different, these jumping worms. They are different from regular earthworms, as we know, but talk about how they are different.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the first thing for folks to realize is that all earthworms, terrestrial earthworms, are non-native. There are no native earthworms in Wisconsin or any glaciated part of North America. There may have been earthworms pre-glaciation, so in Wisconsin, we're talking about, you know, 8 to 12,000 years ago, but the glaciers wiped them out. And so all the earthworms that we have now in the state are primarily from Europe. They were brought over a couple hundred years ago during settlement. And many of these are considered invasive, meaning that they have some detrimental impacts to forest systems. Like I mentioned, gardens, though, are different. They can actually be beneficial to gardens. But now we're seeing this other group of earthworms, primarily from Asian countries, Japan, parts of China, Korean Peninsula, that have begun to move over as well. And they've actually been in the United States for about 80 years or so, in the very southeast part of the country. And for whatever reason, they, in the last 15 years or so, they have started to really expand their range up the East Coast, into the Midwest, and even farther west. And the main reason why we're concerned about these group of earthworms is that that while they're similar to other earthworms in the sense that they consume a lot of organic matter and they change the soil structure and profile, the ones that we have only live in the top few centimeters of soil or in that organic layer, whether it's leaves in the forest or mulch in your garden. So they do all their work in a very small area. And so they don't have the benefits of burrowing into the soil and creating airspace and area for water to infiltrate into the roots of your garden plants. They don't mix the soil very well, so they're not moving nutrients to the root system. They're really, really changing the soil in a very small area. But what happens is, though, they change it so quickly that they actually remove the nutrients. They eat the organic layer so fast that they remove those nutrients quickly, so they're not available to plants. And they modify the soil in such a way that they make it really granular, kind of like coffee grounds is what I like to use as an example. And that is really loose, porous soil that can be easily washed away. It doesn't hold roots at all. And so they do a really good job of changing the soil and manipulating the nutrients, but it's not beneficial, as far as we know so far, to native plants, to ornamental plants. And we're getting a lot of, besides some of the research, we're getting a lot of anecdotal stories from folks around the state and around the country of some negative impacts that they're seeing.
Yeah. I think we've got Linda now. Let's go to Linda in Madison. Linda, hi. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I do some gardening at my house and in a friend's house and then at an apartment building where I work. And at the friend's house, it turned out they have jumping worms there. And I talked to the owner next door and he said, yes, he's had them for at least 3 years. And I also saw one at the where I work. And so I'm like, oh my God, what are we going to do? I'm just wondering, would just as an experiment, if you dug in sort of like just scratched in compost or actual kitchen scraps in like a 1 foot area, would the jumping worms prefer that to other things in the garden, where if you have leaf mulch or wood mulch or you know, so that you could easily go to that 1 foot area all the time and just, you know, pick up the worms and put them in a bucket of water or something?
So that's a really interesting question. And I don't have a good answer for you, unfortunately. What I tell folks is we're at the stage now where, almost trying anything and just to see what might work in your particular spot. I don't know that a compost mix would be any more or less palatable than just your normal mulch layer for earthworms or for jumping worms. And if he's had them for several years, they're probably spread far and wide, pretty high abundance. So my thought is that probably wouldn't make a difference. But again, like it's definitely worth trying. Maybe there'd be something there that would attract them. But I would probably say likely not. It's more, that any kind of organic matter they're going to be happy with, as far as we know at this point.
You know, one of the things that struck me, Linda says she's working in her own area, and the other two areas she mentioned, the other two areas have the jumping worms. If she continues to work in those other areas, what does she need to do to make sure she doesn't spread it back to her own area?
Yeah, that's a great point. And this is for any invasive species, whether it's a garlic mustard seeds or buckthorn fruits or any invasive species, right? If you're working in areas that you know are infested with jumping worms, and then you are moving and going to your neighbors or to a community garden or, to another area that doesn't have them, you want to be really careful that you, wash all your tools, that you're brushing the soles of your boots, anything that you're moving from the infested spot to the non-infested spot, you arrive clean and then you leave clean. That's sort of the mantra that we have. And that's one of our best management practices for slowing the spread of these. It's just being conscious about what you're moving and making sure that you're not inadvertently bringing these critters with you. And, just to add on to that quickly, one of the things that we're really concerned about with this group of earthworms is that we think they primarily spread through their cocoons, not necessarily the earthworm adults themselves, because you can see those adults fairly easily, but the cocoon that they produce, and they produce a lot of cocoons. These are little eggs that overwinter. These are annual species, so you don't find them in the winter. You just have these little eggs that are about 2 millimeters. They're like just like a piece of soil. But boy, they can easily spread with, being attached to plant roots or to your shovels or shoes. So that's what we're really concerned about. And so just being careful that you're arriving to a new place clean is a good way to mitigate the spread.
Yeah. Linda, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. Gene in Appleton will give you a chance. Hi, Gene.
Hi. My question is, I have a lot of jumping worms, and after every rain, they're dead on my driveway, or they may be living for a little while, but they kind of die pretty quickly, and nothing seems to eat them. Robins can be there, but they don't touch them. Are they not food for robins?
So, yeah, that's another good question. Robins, in theory, would eat them. There's lots of birds and mammals, even amphibians that do feed on earthworms in general. It could be that, when those earthworms come to the surface after heavy rains and they're kind of lying on the sidewalk dying or dead, they're just not that appetizing for animals. They don't see them as necessarily a food source any longer. I'd be curious, in the spring when we see a lot of those earthworms come to the surface after heavy rains, those could also be European earthworms. There's an earthworm called the red worm, Lumbricus rubellus, that lives in the same area of the soil jumping worms, and those are the ones that we often see on the sidewalks. This time of year, jumping worms are either not hatched yet or they're just like 1 centimeter long. So it could be that maybe what you're seeing, not saying that you don't have jumping worms, but what you're seeing in the spring at least could be different earthworms as well. But generally, there are some animals that will eat them, but there's probably not enough out there that would really reduce the population.
Have you ever observed a bird like a robin eating them, Brad?
I have not. I have observed there's a graduate student that is looking at toads and seeing if toads will eat them, and she has seen toads eat them. However, what's interesting is that in her experiment, they didn't actually like them that much compared to the common nightcrawler. So they would attack them, but they wouldn't actually eat them because they were too much trouble. They were jumping around and they were just like, this is more work than I want. So I have not seen them in the wild, anything feed on them.
Okay. Gene, thanks again for calling, by the way. Appreciate it very much. Brad Herrick, ecologist, research program manager at the UW-Madison Arboretum, our guest today as we talk with him about earthworms in general and zeroing in a bit on those jumping worms. Doggone it, they're here. Oh, man. Jill Nadeau, our producer, Christina Myshock, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at earthworms on the program right now. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about the Wisconsin Women in Conservation Coalition. So looking forward to that about 11:45. But right now, it's earthworms with our guest, Brad Herrick, ecologist and research program manager at the UW-Madison Arboretum. Give a call with your questions or comments or maybe your experiences to share with the jumping worms or other earthworms. Love to hear from you. Number's 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Carolyn Madison called. She's concerned about jumping worms, and she has not used mulch for a few years. How can she know the mulch she buys isn't infested?
Great question, and it's a tough one. So, you know, one of the things that we suggest is start off with, you know, asking questions. So if you purchase mulch especially from a local vendor or provider, a nursery, at this point, most outfits know about jumping worms, and they also don't want them. We've worked with the green industry for a while now to come up with best management practices. And so especially the more local mulch providers and nurseries should know about them and can tell you if their mulch that they produce and bag is free of jumping worms. In Wisconsin, so in terms of compost, at least, in Wisconsin, commercial composters are required to heat their compost to 131 degrees Fahrenheit for at least 3 days, depending on how they're producing it. And we know now that temperature for that period of time will render the earthworms and cocoons non-viable, and the earthworms will not survive that. So if you are buying compost that is produced in Wisconsin, that's a really good way to know that, you know, that's probably going to be safe. In terms of mulch, the best thing I can say is just kind of know where it's coming from and ask questions about it. If you can produce mulch on site or get it from an arborist, a tree company that you trust and can, again, ask questions about jumping worms, that's the best way to go about it, rather than probably purchasing from, you know, a big box store that just bringing in mulch from other places in the country.
Makes good sense. Joyce in Belleville, let's go to you now. Hi, Joyce. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. So I'm pretty certain that I brought jumping worms onto my property last year with a whole bunch of hardwood mulch. So now I have this huge pile of hardwood mulch. I'm not going to do anything with it. Is there any way that I can get rid of it or try to minimize if there's jumping worms in there to keep them from expanding past that mulch pile?
Yeah. How large of a pile is it?
I mean, it's pretty big. We have a friend who has a tree service. So last year he was looking for a place to dump his hardwood trimmings, and we just said, "Yeah, dump it here." And now I have jumping worms. So
unfortunately, we hear that story a lot. You know, I just mentioned about compost, but one of the things would be to try to heat that pile up, and just, you know, It's probably in the middle of that mulch pile. It's getting pretty warm anyways. Are you seeing earthworms anywhere like on the bottom of the pile or just kind of throughout the pile?
Well, I have not gone over to the pile yet. It's a little early in the season yet to see if there's any worms around the perimeter of it. We had already spread a bunch of hardwood mulch last year, and so when I discovered them, I went and bought a whole bunch of clear plastic and covered it all up and tried to solarize it. But now, because I have this mulch pile, I was thinking maybe I should put some of that clear plastic around the perimeter to just keep that soil warm enough that, there's no cocoons that are hopefully going to escape. But then there's the rest of the pile that I don't know what to do with.
Yeah, is this pile like 8 feet high or something, Joyce?
It is. It's probably about a half a dozen or more dump loads of mulch. So it's a pretty big
pile.
Gotcha.
It's multiple piles. Yeah.
I gotcha.
Yeah. So this is a good question because I think a lot of people are in your situation. The one thing that you sort of already alluded to is, if you can heat that pile up, even use a meat thermometer and, test that pile once in a while and see what it's getting up to. If you can heat it up to 104 degrees Fahrenheit for a couple of days, ensuring that you're mixing it a little bit so that it's all getting heated, that's probably the best that we can do if you still want to use it. If I don't know what else you could do. If you already have jumping worms in your garden areas, then the other thing is you're unlikely to be exasperating the problem by using that mulch since they're already there. That's kind of up to you, but the heat treatment is kind of what we have right now. And since you do have it all in one spot, it might be easier to heat up.
Yeah.
That's what I would suggest at this point.
Yeah. So your ideas, Joyce, I think we're good. But maybe if you could do the whole pile, it would have been better. But at least get around the edges of it. Thank you for calling. Joe in Clinton, we'll go to you. Hi, Joe.
Hey there. About 5 years ago, I was digging my garlic, and I noticed that the ground did look like moldy, granular. I thought it was really weird, and then I saw jumping worms. Fast forward to the last couple years, I haven't seen any worms at all in my garden for a few years now, and I'm wondering is it wise to, go out and buy from a bait shop a bunch of red worms or a bunch of earthworms and try and reestablish a worm population, because I haven't seen jumping worms and the ground hasn't looked that granular look for years now.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. Did you pull jumping worms out of your area? Did you try and control them when you first saw them?
Well, I got to tell you, I always till my whole garden. So I long ago when I was and I didn't have jumping worms, I thought this is not good for my earthworm population. But I think maybe all the tilling I do killed them off, because I haven't seen earthworms or jumping worms for years now.
Interesting. Yeah. That could very well be. You're really, are you putting down mulch every year?
I haven't typically, but the last few years I've been putting down straw and leaves.
Ah, interesting. By disturbing that, that sort of soil crust every year by tilling, you might have in effect, buried some of those cocoons for one, possibly too deep in the soil for them to hatch. I don't know if that, we don't know much about that part of the life cycle, but they're only in that top layer. And so if you're not seeing them, in that top layer, then they've, something happened to them. Maybe they moved on somewhere else, or you've found a nice control mechanism there. But the other thing with the other earthworms, we do know that when jumping worms move in, they have the ability to displace every other species of earthworm, regardless if they're deeper dwelling, like the nightcrawler, or ones are at the surface. We don't know why, but we have data on this from the Arboretum and other studies that have shown this, that whatever it is, maybe it's their body chemistry or how they feed, they displace other earthworms. So that's, you know, that's not necessarily surprising that you're not seeing other earthworms, although if your jumping worms are gone too, then, you know, why, you know, they're not coming back for some reason. And I guess I would say, unless you're seeing health problems with your garlic or other crops, I would not add earthworms. You know, they will come back. I don't see why they wouldn't come back. Are you having problems, Joe, with your garlic or other crops?
No, I don't feel like okay. I am. I just, you know, this sense of loss that I see no worms at all when I'm working in the garden now, and I've stopped killing the whole garden.
Interesting. Yeah, I would just kind of keep doing what you're doing, and I would think that eventually you'll get worms that will come back in, hopefully not jumping worms, but that's an interesting story. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, that is really interesting. That's the first time I've heard of anybody being able to eliminate them. Yeah, I bet you a lot of people are taking a note of that. And I suppose at the same time, if Joe wants to see earthworms, there's no reason why he couldn't go down to the bait store and buy a couple dozen and throw them in the garden.
Yeah, as long as he's sure they're not jumping worms. and that's a good point, Larry, actually, because at this point in Wisconsin, it is illegal to sell them, jumping worms, that is. It's obviously other earthworms are can be sold for fishing and one other uses. But just know what you're buying, Joe, before you do that, just so you're getting the right earthworms.
Yeah. Christopher in Madison, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I have bad jumping worms in my yard, and I use wood chip to mulch the pathways around my bed. But for a few years, I've been using straw bales, and they really go with great vegetables. Do the worms get into the straw bales? Are they going to degrade the bales? I haven't noticed the effect yet.
Okay. Good question there, too. So one thing I can say about straw is that I'm guessing, there's no research on this, but I'm guessing that straw will not be as palatable of an organic source than, say, wood mulch or leaves. We've done a little work on some of these different types of organic matter, organic materials, and we used prairie grasses, so like C4 grasses, like big blue stem, switchgrass, Indian grass, that sort of mimic straw. They don't break down very quickly. And the earthworms did not like them at all. They did not eat them. They did not produce cocoons very much in them. And so versus, you know, your more typical maple organic matter that breaks down quickly. So my thought would be that it might be a really good thing to try doing the straw bale gardening, or even using straw as a mulch. I don't think it's going to be as palatable.
Yeah, to the jumping worms. Yeah, there.
Right.
Worth it. Yeah, it's worth it. Christopher, thank you very much. Janet in Maple Bluff, your turn. Hi, Janet.
Yeah. Hi. Well, I've been struggling with jumping worms for at least 5 years. For many, many years, I was getting loads of wood chips using them as mulch, and the worms just loved that. So I've stopped doing that, and I just use leaves now. But I have a comment and some questions. And my comment is on the subject of what eats them. So I've been observing these worms for a long, long time, and robins will eat the very youngest ones, but as soon as they get really their exoskeleton or whatever it is gets rigid, then the robins won't touch them. But what happened in my yard is really interesting. Suddenly short-tailed shrews showed up. And last year I had so many short-tailed shrews that they were running around like chipmunks. And they're eating the worms. So
oh,
I was really amazed to see that these little shrews are eating them. And they usually are a really secretive little mammal. But these guys have become so numerous and brazen that they're just running around. So anyway, that's my comment about what eats them. But I have some questions now also about the harm that the worms are doing. I have a lot of native plantings in my yard, and back when I was using the wood chips, they were really destructive, and a lot of my native plants just died. But now that I'm using leaves, they're doing better. But what I want to know is, are the worms actually eating plant roots? Or somehow is there a chemical content to their castings? What is it that's actually inhibiting the plant growth?
Great question. So we think it's a little bit of both. We think it's indirect effects and direct. So there is some evidence coming out that depending on the plant species and how they root, the jumping worms will eat roots. They'll eat the fine roots for sure. They won't eat, you know, the long tap roots, but those fine roots that are closer to the surface, they will certainly eat. Otherwise, from what we know so far, which isn't a lot, it's how they change the soil structure. So, you know, even at the arboretum, we're finding areas where we're trying to plant native plants into with that granular coffee ground like topsoil. There's just nothing for the roots to hold onto. It doesn't hold water very well. There's too much pore space. So it's the structure of the soil. The other thing is that these, you can kind of think of these jumping worms and how they manipulate soil nutrients as a quick release fertilizer. So they are doing most of their action at the end of the growing season. So if you want to go out and find jumping worms, go in August and September, and you'll see their greatest abundance, and they are really chowing down on the organic matter, producing a lot of nutrients. But those nutrients are tied up in their little castings, and those castings, they're not distributing down into the soil profile like other earthworms do. And like I mentioned, that soil that they're creating these castings in is very loose and granular. Any kind of rain event, if you have any kind of slope, could easily erode away. And, you know, in the fall, those plants aren't looking necessarily to put any more biomass above ground to produce fruit or flowers. They're putting their sugars into their root system for overwinter, so they're not even looking for those nutrients necessarily. So the timing is all off when it comes to the jumping worms and any benefits for plants, as far as we know.
There you go. Janet, thanks so much. It was interesting about the short-tailed shrews, isn't it?
Yeah, that is. And I've heard they're actually voracious predators, but you just don't see them very often. That's interesting to hear. Yeah, thank you.
Megan wondered why they're called jumping worms. Do they jump? And indeed they do. You can go online and see some photos, can't you, Brad?
You can. There's lots of videos to watch. And, you know, they don't jump, you know, they don't have legs. They're not really jumping, but they're actively flopping around on their sides and just very, very active. And there's nothing similar to them that you'll see in the soil.
Janet wondered if they could be spread by birds.
I suppose. I mean, if the birds are, you know, maybe taking one in their mouth and flying off and dropping it, they could do that. I don't know if the birds would be eating cocoons and then flying and you know, pooping them out somewhere like they do with buckthorn and honeysuckle. I don't know that. Probably unlikely.
Ken in Beloit, what's on your mind?
Good morning. Well, I'm thinking about these jumping worms in another fashion. I do a lot of fishing, and I was just wondering, are they good to use for fishing, like a regular nightcrawler? Because I've had a couple, I think, in my backyard. I probably got more than just a couple, but if I could pick them up and use them for fishing, that's what I'm interested in. in doing, and that would eliminate them. But I don't know if they're good for fishing. I'll just take my answer off the air.
Yeah. I don't know. If you can get them on the hook.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. That's the first step. They I've heard from folks that they're not great for bait because of just that reason, Larry. They are just so active and wiggly. Yeah. And when they're disturbed, they will also they have the ability to drop part of their body segment. It's sort of like as a way to escape predation, like some lizards can do. So they're just really messy to work with when they're like that. So I don't think they're going to be great for fishing bait just from being able to use them.
Okay, you can try, Ken, but I don't know.
Yeah,
Brad, you have a webinar that you're doing in April.
Yeah,
talk about
yeah,
that.
So for sure, thank you. Yeah, so I'm giving a statewide extension talk April 21st from noon to one. Sorry during your show, Larry. It's unfortunate. but it's open to the public and you have to register for it, but it's a free webinar. And it'll be a talk that'll kind of expand on what we're talking about today, Larry. Just a lot more information about earthworms, some control options, the latest research that we have, kind of the broad look at jumping worms and how we might deal with them in the future. So it's a good talk if you don't know anything about jumping worms. It's a good talk if you have years of experience with them.
And you'll have photos and maybe some video to go along with it as
well.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of video.
Yeah, lots of video. And how do people sign up again now? What do they do?
So you can go to the Arboretum website and sign up that way. And I'll also share the link with you, Larry, that folks can go to and just click on the event and sign up for free.
That's perfect. And I think Jill's already put that up on our page. So if you go to WPR.org/Larry, it's all you need to do. WPR.org/Larry. You're going to find the link there and you can click on it and sign right up. Well, Brad, this has been interesting. I've learned a couple of things today. Maybe you did, too. There was some interesting talks there between short-tailed shrew and between tilling the ground as a couple of control measures that hadn't come to my mind. I'm glad we had a chance to talk about it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Appreciate it very much. Brad Herrick. He's an ecologist and research program manager at the UW-Madison Arboretum. And again, go to the Larry Mueller Show page, and you can click on that free webinar. You'll get to see a lot of the video. He'll have a lot of videos and a lot of visuals on the jumping worm. So that's definitely worth finding out more about. And I tell you what, we're going to find out some more about getting women or more women involved in conservation. That's coming up next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.